That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenblum.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the ninth floor, but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and more to my plate. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday suckage on the score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
Let's see who else is here. Grobber.
It sucks and it freebases.
Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Jake Arrieta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Albert Almora.
Damn, Willie, man, like, do we suck?
Pat Fitzgerald.
Sometimes you gotta embrace the suck.
Eloy Jimenez.
Hey, you guys are gonna make anyway. You guys suck. When I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the sock team.
Toby!
Oh my God, this sucks!
Random Bears fan.
At the front of the
field,
we suck!
Trey Boys!
Finally made a list of somebody who thinks he sucks besides I do.
Nimendrix!
I wouldn't say seeking perfection, it's just mainly trying not to suck.
Julie Swyka.
Man, that sucks.
Wilson Contreras.
Losing suck. I'll tell you that, and that's all I can say.
George Wendt.
We had fun, but there you go. I suck.
Garth Algar.
Turn it off, man! Turn it off! It's sucking my will to live!
Steve Dahl.
Disco sucks! Disco sucks!
Candace Parker.
It sucks.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah, man. Sucks.
Tyler Farengol.
I'll try not to suck.
Yeah, well, you would have. It would have. If damn Cesar Perez, you just should have gotten out of the way. Then he would have been on brand, Cesar. Don't start punching buttons for our new rookie producer. Hi, Tyler. How are you doing? You doing all right? Does this suck for you, Tyler?
Well, I'll try not to follow the brand of the show, and if I do suck, I'll just embrace it.
No, it's all about sucking. It's all about sucking so people don't have to. We're here for them. That's what Saturday Suckage is all about. Much too late to save Purdue and Matt Painter, but we'll get to him in just a moment. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Our phone number at the Score, 312-644-6767. That'll get you to our listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit the BetQL.com website. That number, 312-644-6767, also gets you to the Score's text zone. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. And before we even got to this point, 971 texture, you can do the whole show about Purdue basketball, Steve. Nobody sucks like them, except maybe Illinois basketball, LOL. Well, actually, Purdue does suck more than Illinois. Earlier Friday, in what seemed to be a calmer time among NCAA tournament, a tweet came out. Former Boilermakers great Jaden Ivey, he's now a Piston. He tweeted out, pretty simple, with a boiler train in front of a locomotive, "Let's make history." No lie. True fact. Perfect. Too perfect.
I hope he means history by three straight years of losing to a double-digit seed in the tournament.
Farley Dickinson went 4-22 last season. That would be the opponent for Purdue, the number one seed. Farley Dickinson would be the number 16 seed. Tobin Anderson got the coaching job at Farley Dickinson in May. And he proceeded to lead the Knights to a historic 116-16-1 upset. It is an incredible accomplishment for reasons you may not fully know. And here's how incredible. Just listen. Here is Farley Dickinson coach Tobin Anderson right after the game on the court on TNT.
Coach, on Wednesday, we heard you say in the locker room, the more I watch Purdue, the more I think I can beat this, we can beat this team. What did you see on tape?
Well, I mean, I just trust our guys. I have faith in our guys. And the speech got overblown, you know. We just have faith in what we do, and our guys are so tough and so competitive, you know. I'll do a better job in this locker room speech than last, but I'll be a little more competitive. It was the right message, maybe the wrong audience. But listen, I love our guys. They're tough. They're gritty. They play their tails off. That's an unbelievable win. I mean, we just did something that was, I mean, that's unbelievable. We just shocked the world, and couldn't happen to a better bunch of guys, a better bunch of fans, my family, the whole thing. So we are ecstatic, unbelievable. We're going to stay in Columbus. I love it.
That's Tobin Anderson, coach of Farley Dickinson. The best part about what Farley Dickinson last night is Farley Dickinson shouldn't have been there. Farley Dickinson finished second in the conference to Merrimack and then lost by a point to Merrimack in the conference tournament. Merrimack should have been there, not Farley Dickinson. Merrimack should have been Purdue's opponent. Merrimack was not Purdue's opponent. Because there is an NCAA rule among the many stupid things the NCAA has, the NCAA rule makes a team ineligible for the tournament if it is transitioning to a D1 status, as Merrimack was doing. So the second place finisher, Farley Dickinson, went to the final, the first four of the play-in, won, and then showed up to play Purdue. That's what makes this the greatest upset in college basketball history. And I want to stop everyone right now before you start talking about the greatest upset in sports ever. No. As long as the scoreboard reads 4-3 in Lake Placid, U.S. 4, Soviets 3, the Miracle on Ice will remain the greatest upset since David and Goliath. So the miracle remains the greatest. However, there was NCAA history being made, and it was this, as John Rothstein, a CBS Sports Insider, the point he makes. If you remember UMBC, we'll get to them in a moment. They're wonderful, University of Maryland, Baltimore County. In 2018, they beat Virginia. Or St. Peter's, a 215, and that too was Purdue. Hello! Farley Dickinson did not earn an at-large qualifier. Merrimack did, but was ineligible. Unlike UMBC or St. Peter's, Farley Dickinson came from the first four. So yeah, congratulations, Matt Painter and Purdue. Congratulations. Congratulations on getting Zach Edey. Now, Zach Edey is 7'4". He's maybe the player of the year, right? You could call it. We'll wait to see how that goes, how that comes down. Zach Edey gets one shot in the final 12 minutes against the smallest school in the tournament, while Matt Painter's team is shooting 5-26 from three. Congratulations, Matt Painter. Edey, like, it's not like he had a bad game. 20 points, 15 rebounds, 3 blocks, 60% from the field, that or more. And it's the first time anybody has done that and lost in the NCAA tournament. Congratulations, Matt Painter and Purdue. There's this tweet noting from Beating the Books from 6. With 6:41 to go to 55 seconds to go, Purdue didn't attempt a single two-point field goal while in the bonus with Zach Edey against the smallest team in the country, which got in the tournament on a technicality. Congratulations, Matt Painter. Here's Purdue, the only team to lose to a team seeded 13 or worse in three consecutive NCAA tournaments. Count them. Three. Count them there in West Lafayette. But wait, it gets worse, Matt Painter. Purdue is the only school ever to lose to both a 15 seed and a 16 seed. Congratulations, Matt Painter. In all, Matt Painter of Purdue has a tournament resume. Well, actually, in all, this is Matt Painter's coaching resume in the tournament. He has lost to an 11 seed, a 12 seed, a 13 seed, a 15 seed, and now a 16 seed. So Matt Painter needs only a loss to a 14 seed to cover his NCAA choking bingo card. I can't imagine there is a more choking as coach. I was trying to figure something out, trying to find a name. Who has choked worse than Matt Painter? And I thought, first thing that pops to mind in a lot of these discussions is Bobby Cox. He had Maddox, Glavin, and Smoltz. For 15 years, he won World Series. But he won a World Series. It was only one, but he won a World Series. And winning kind of makes, okay, so that doesn't. Okay, how about Dusty Baker? Dusty Baker went out to the mound, took the ball from Russ Ortiz in 2002 and asked if he wanted to keep the ball. And the Giants never won another game. Dusty Baker's Giants. And we saw what happened in 2003, Dusty managing against the Marlins and Moises Alou throwing a fit in left field. And, well, that didn't happen. But Dusty won a World Series last year with the cheating Astros, the Bastros.
The Asterix.
Yeah. So the next name I came up with, Marv Levy. Chicago's, he's a resident here. He is a well-educated, wonderful man. Great guy to sit and talk with. Marv Levy went to four straight Super Bowls and lost all four. And you go, wow, that's okay. Here's where it's still not worse than Matt Painter, because he got four Super Bowls. The only teams he couldn't beat for four straight years was an NFC representative. He beat everybody in the AFC. He got to four straight Super Bowls. Nobody's ever gotten to four straight Super Bowls. Marv Levy got to four straight Super Bowls. He didn't win one of them, and that's why it. But Matt Painter has lost to an 11 to 12, a 13 to 15, and now a 16. How cool is that?
I got a legit question, though. How much longer do you think he'll be the head coach, knowing that this school says, all right, we know we're going to have a good regular season and come up short in the tournament almost every single year?
Well, there you go. I don't know. In West Lafayette, maybe they'll figure that out someday. They've got a history of that. It's not like, as a texter notes, 773 texter, he takes after his mentor, Gene Cady, who's still waiting on his first Final Four appearance. He stayed there a long time without a Final Four. So one of the happy outcomes, I mean, Farley Dickinson is a great story. And most of these times when you see going back to Gonzaga or College of Charleston, they're like, who, what, where, huh? They all get asked. But in this age of social media, this, for me, is one of the best, most human, most entertaining, funniest parts of the story is the social media. If you're a college basketball program, college athletics program, you need a good social media. You need a funny social media. You need a team that carpe diem, seize the moment, know what's going on, be able to comment on the game in front of you, much like a coach needs to coach the game in front of him. Matt Painter can't do that. But Farley Dickinson social media, that's a number one seed. So there are a couple minutes to go, And FDU Knights MBB, that's Farley Dickinson University, the Knights men's basketball, tweeted out this. This is so good. As the Purdue game is winding down, big replay here. That's all in caps. Big replay here. In the meantime, we'll save you the Google. FDU is in Hackensack, New Jersey. Proud of it, too. That's the Farley Dickinson social media. So this, all immediately I'm thinking, I love these people. They're just like UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County, that upset Virginia, the first 16 seed to beat a one. And they were spectacular. The UMBC social media was great. As the upset last night was unfolding, UMBC tweeted out a shot of the bat signal with a Batman standing on a peak. Just singular Batman. And after the game, after the upset, FDU tweeted, "What's up, UMBC?" And UMBC tweeted back, "We have a friend," all caps. To that, Farley Dickinson's social media tweeted, they tweeted the scene, it was a video, the scene from Step Brothers. John C. Reilly, Will Ferrell standing there. Did we just become best friends?
That's awesome.
And here's what my emotional support oracle at Trader Joe's, a guy named John. He's a Boilermaker right down to his collection of mechanical pencils. And so he was not a real happy guy. So, of course, I seized on that. And I walked up to the bridge and I took out my phone and I said, "Hey, Siri, tell me about the celebrations in Farley Dickinson. Tell me about the celebrations on Farley Dickinson campus." And he just drops his head. And I really hadn't seen any. It struck me like, what is really going on? So I found a Twitter account of a reporter named Liam Quinn. He works for The Record and at NorthJersey.com. And he tweeted this comment, "Wild scene on FDU's campus." And it had a picture. And the picture under it was of the school buildings in the distance, way in the distance, way in the distance of a near empty parking lot. In the biggest week, Farley Dickinson sports history, this is spring break. Nobody was on campus. I just love this story so much. And I wanted to share all that with you. And I love that the idea that Purdue is, it's very Big Ten-ish of Purdue, by the way. And I love the idea that Matt Painter is only a 14 and a 10. He's only a 14 and a 10 away from losing to every double-digit seed. That is a hell of a choking bingo card. This is Saturday Suckage, so of course we talked about Purdue. Of course. We're going to take a break. When we come back, our first guest, I'll give you the guest list later, and then we'll have a... Oh, you know what? You can set this up now. All right, Tyler, as long as you're new here and you tried to suck during the roll call, didn't quite make it. Dr. Dreidel is my rap name now, as voted on by the audience. Set up a web poll. Listen, Tyler, set up a web poll. Dr. Dreidel or this week's challenger, Biggie Schmaltz. Okay, set that up. People can vote. It's at 670 The Score. That's our Twitter account, and we can run a web poll. Can you do that, Tyler?
I can make that happen.
Do it. We'll come back with Corey Wooten. We'll talk Bears defensive line. What is it? Where is it? When is it going to happen? Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
How much better can you get on the defensive line between now and when you get the players here in the spring? You've got Walker, and that's about it to a pretty thin unit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, it's right now, you get the sense of we gotta fix everything right now. And the opportunities are going to be limited, but I feel comfortable with between the rest of free agency, we're only 2 days into it, as well as in the draft, that we can get that group as good as we possibly can. And at the same time, there are going to be some weak spots on our roster that we can't fix everything, but we are going to stay flexible to do the best we can to get better. And then, again, if you go from a short-term thinking of we got to do everything right now, you extend that out and do things the right way, over time we'll be able to heal up all of those positions.
Bears GM Ryan Poles meeting the media this week. Standing in the rain. Talking about, well, the defensive line, but also in there was the, you got his macro view. You got his 30,000 foot view of what's going on. And what's going on, Bears fans, and we're all caught. I'm kind of caught. We're all caught. They make moves. They get better. How could they not get better, right? They were the worst team in football. They were 3-14. They sucked on their offensive line. They sucked on the defensive line. They sucked offensively. They sucked defensively. Anywhere you could do it, you did it. Hell, they sucked in the GM's office. Chase Claypool turned out to be a disaster for now. He didn't make Justin Fields any better. He got hurt, and Ryan Poles gave up pretty much a first-round draft pick to get him. The Steelers specifically chose the Bears over the Packers. They knew the Bears would be worse. They were right. The Bears were the worst. Thank you, Lovie Smith. And Ryan Poles knows what's in front of him. And what's in front of him is not next year. But you get excited that they're making moves. They traded the first-round pick. They got a number one receiver. They got a first. They swapped first-rounders this year. They got a first-rounder next year. They got a second-rounder next year along with DJ Moore. They are piling up draft picks so they can amass talent. And how that plays out will be a large part of Ryan Poles' legacy. Now that he's... I mean, it's easy to wreck something, even the Bears. There were some talented players, and then you saw them all leave. Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn and Roquan Smith. And for a while there, it looked like Roquan Smith ruined the Bears' season. He held out, quitting on his teammates. He held out. And then when he showed up, he made an interception late in the game against the Houston Texans, and Cairo Santos was set up for a winning field goal, and he did it. And like for the longest time, until Lovie Smith played to win when he should have been fired before the 2-point conversion, it looked like Roquan Smith's interception was going to be the difference between the first and second pick and all the leverage in the world and not. And then he used all the leverage Ryan Poles did because Lovie Smith got it. And we're still trying to get Corey Wooten. Tyler Farengel is producing this show and reaching out to make his first big splash on Saturday Suckage, and no answer. It's okay. We'll get there, Tyler. Anyways, the trades, the moves, the signings. Look, a Green Bay tight end. A guy who's coming home. A lot of people are coming home. They got linebackers. One thing I don't understand, someone's going to have to explain to me. If you don't want to pay $20 million for Roquan Smith, which I think was a number kicked around, why are you paying $18 million for his replacement? Roquan Smith is better, was better, his numbers are better. How is that not happening? Did it get so personal in the negotiations? Did Ryan Poles not navigate that well? Did he? I don't understand how $2 million, it can make a difference in salary cap, I guess, whatever counts against that. But you didn't want to pay a better linebacker $2 million more. And so I'm wondering why. How does that work? And the thing that's hasn't been addressed, really, is that impact player on the defensive line. Edge rusher, three technique, anybody who can hunt quarterbacks. Understand, this team's active leader at the end of the season was Jaquan Brisker. He's your safety, and he's leading your team in sacks. Just to clarify, not a good thing. So they need people there. They need a guy in the middle their version of Tommy Harris or Warren Sapp or any name you want, somebody to play that. And thought it was going to be Jalen Carter. For all the time, if Ryan Poles had hung onto that draft pick and kept the number one pick, and I wonder how much Jalen Carter turning into a person of interest, as police would say, and being cited for a couple misdemeanors in an accident that killed two people. How much did that play into his decision? Actually, Ryan Poles, based on the signings last year, people he brought in, Byron Pringle and Matt Adams and who was the other guy? David Moore. He brought in guys that got arrested. So maybe Poles likes his guys to come pre-arrested. Maybe Jalen Carter is of interest to him. And now the thought is he traded back to 9. Ryan Poles did, taking the Panthers' offer of swapping first-round picks and everything else that went along, all the filthy lucre the Bears got. And then you're watching Jalen Carter, just a death spiral of a draft status. From a guy who might have been the number one pick to suddenly he's got to go home, he's leaving the combine, he's not meeting with anybody, he's got to go answer police charges, he's got to post bail, then he shows up at the combine, meets with teams, won't meet with the media, goes home, and 9 days later at a pro day, he's fat and slow and can't finish his positional drills. Fat, dumb, and stupid is no way to go through life, son, Dean Wormer said. He didn't say dumb. Dumb and stupid would be the same thing. But it seems as though Jalen Carter is doubling down on his idiocy. And he might be there when Ryan Poles picks. When the Bears pick at 9. Presuming they hold on at number 9. They might not. He's got enough ammo now to trade up, Ryan Poles does. If there's somebody there he desperately wants at 7, he could do that. 217 texter, 4-year deal versus 6-year deal, so it's $28 million difference in money and not just $2 million a year. Well, every deal can be cut. 4 or 6-year deal, all you get, you know what? In football, you get a 1-year deal. That's it. Sometimes you get a 1-game deal. It's not the length of that. Guys get cut all the time. Guys sign $154 million contracts. Wasn't that what Jay did? Jay Cutler signed a $126 million contract and didn't collect half of that. So the term of the deal all means nothing in the NFL. All right, we managed to track down our guy, Corey Wooten. He joins me on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Corey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Sorry, guys. I was dealing with a dog kennel situation. So,
dog versus kennel. Did the dog win or did the kennel win, Corey?
No. It was some kind of paperwork with the vaccines and all that. Oop. You know, the Bordetella, rabies, and all that. We got ironed out, though. We got a ski trip next week, so had to take care of that. But thanks for being patient with me, fellas.
All right. We have Corey Wooten from Fox 32, football analyst, former Bear, and a former defensive lineman, most notably ending Brett Favre's career with a sack. So what the Bears – let's go back to what Ryan Poles did last week with his trade, what you thought, and what you think of the events that have transpired, leaving the position you played largely unattended.
Yeah, I really like what he did last week, you know, trading the number one pick back to number 9, getting DJ Moore because – I was really worried that they weren't going to get a number one receiver, especially the fact that DJ Moore is only 25 years old. I followed him when I worked for the Big Ten Network, explosive player, a guy that can high point the ball, go up and get it. And that's kind of what the Bears were missing. That was Justin Fields was missing. And every great quarterback in this league has a number one that can go up and get it, right? And then being able to get a number one next year, number two, second round pick this year, second round pick next year. I thought that was amazing, right? Address some of the offensive line needs, you know, with the guy from Tennessee, Nate Davis, the guard, really, really good player. But now all of a sudden, right, the defensive line, we only had one guy that we picked up, and there's a lot of needs. There's four positions that really you know, the Bears really need in a hurry, especially pass rushers. So it's going to be interesting to see. There's going to be some really good defensive ends available still in the second and third round, and then potentially in the first as well. But there's a lot of needs on the defensive side of the ball.
Corey Wooten is my guest. He was born on my birthday on June 22nd, although he was born about 41 years later. 21 years later. I don't know. I can't even count now. I can't believe that. You were born on June 22nd, yep. And I'm in 56, 66, 76. My God, 31 years later, you were born. And Corey, I
87, man.
I did not have to feel old to do this, but I feel old. So you watch what the Bears, they need pass rushers, and then you saw, for the longest time, Jalen Carter, I guess before before the incident in Georgia where two people died in a drag racing, a car racing, a vehicle racing incident. And then the mess at the combine, and then he shows. And before then, he was talked about as a number one pick for a team like the Bears. Well, we got our quarterback; we don't need that. This is a guy who makes the entire defense go like Tommy Harris did. Now, I don't know where his draft status is. You see what happens where he's got to go answer to charges, and he posts bail, and he shows up. Teams talk to him, then he goes back. He does his pro day, and he shows up fat and out of shape, and he can't finish drills for his pro day. What do you make of that? What's your risk tolerance, or what do you think Ryan Poles' risk tolerance is for that?
Yeah, I think I'm done with him unless you can get him in the second round, and I don't think he'll fall to the second round. But for me, you know, a guy that's going to be your first-round pick, that's going to be the lifeline of that defense, especially in that Tampa 2, that 3 technique, I'm actually now looking at a guy, Kalijah Kancey, that I've been really high on. Reminds me a lot of Aaron Donald, right? Similar size. His explosion, and if I'm going to be honest with you, I think as a pass rusher, he is more dominant than Jalen Carter. I think he is.
Really?
You know, I do. Look at the tape of him. He is as explosive as you can come. And when you talk about the Tampa 2, that 3 technique, I mean, he flies off the ball, and that's what you need in here. So in my opinion, I like him better than Jalen Carter because he plays with a motor. Right, he's a guy that's going to give you everything you have every down. Pass rusher, he's already there. And in this Tampa 2 scheme, it's not about run stop. It's about how quickly can you get off the ball, and that sets the edge of the defense. So you allow a guy to get uphill and penetrate. I think he'd be a great fit, especially the Bears are at number 9 right now, especially if they were able to trade back again potentially and then get him in that 15 to 20 range. I think that'd be a good fit.
Especially if he doesn't come with any priors. I got one last question, Corey. I appreciate it. Let's call on your Northwestern ties. And another person the Bears are looking, another player the Bears certainly would look at, is Peter Skoronski, left tackle. What do you make of him as a pro? Is he a left tackle, a right tackle, a guard? And what
I think he could play any position. I think he's a natural left tackle, but people are saying about his arm size. My thing is like this. You could either play or you can't. You look at the tape of him 2 years ago against Aiden Hutchinson, arguably the best rookie to come out this past year, locked him down, left tackle. Arm length wasn't an issue. Skoronski could play guard. He played right tackle when Slater was there. So he can play any position across the offensive line. So it seems like, for me, that the Bears feel good about Braxton Jones as their left tackle because they were trying to get McGlinchey to play right tackle. So I think personally, like, they're probably going to pass on him because I think I would play him at left guard. You know, if you feel good about Braxton Jones, I would draft him, you know, maybe 9th, slide him in the left guard, and then all of a sudden, you know, and then Tevin Jenkins to right tackle.
You got your all your toy soldiers. You're moving them all over the place, aren't you?
All right. You can play Skoronski at any of those positions. I think that's the great part about him.
Corey, I appreciate the time. Glad you got everything down. Pet the doggy for me, okay? What's the doggy's name? Is the doggy's name Brad or Favre?
Charlie and Bane. Yeah, two dogs.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Corey.
All right, thank you.
All right. That's Corey Wooten, former Bear, Fox 32 analyst and football. Take a break. When we come back, we'll analyze the offensive line with the Super Bowl center, Jay Hilgenberg. Saturday Suckage, Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
How would you characterize kind of the activity on the offensive tackle market and what this week has been like and where you go from here?
Yeah, I will stick to this. I mean, it comes down to value and where we felt comfortable. You know, with our research, our evaluations, analytics, all of that, you know, there was a certain point where we were comfortable with based on the value and the evaluation that we had. And if it surpassed that, we were okay with moving on.
And it did. Ryan Poles thought going above $17 million for Mike McGlinchey was too much. He said pass, bye-bye. Let's talk offensive line. We just talked defensive line with Corey Wooten. We will talk offensive line with Jay Hilgenberg. He's joining me on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Jay, thanks for taking time out this morning. I appreciate it.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling pretty groovy. You know, sometimes my grooviness precedes me, but that's just something that cannot be dealt with other than to wrap yourself in it. Okay, Jay?
Right. It's hard to deny that.
Yeah, hard to deny grooviness. So it looks like from all the stuff Ryan Poles said, let's start with, it looks like Cody Whitehair is moving back to center for now. Everything with Ryan Poles, rightly so, is for now or today. So what do you think of that? You've watched him play center. You watched him play guard. Scout the center, scouting the center for me.
Cody is quite an athlete in there. He's had a nice career. Last year, he's banged up a little bit, played injured. I think that affected him a little bit. The one thing I have a little concern on with Cody at the center position is playing out of the shotgun. He had trouble snapping that pass back to the quarterback, and then he ended up like what a lot of college guys do, is just grab one end of the ball and flip it back. And if Justin feels fine with that, there shouldn't be a problem with doing it that way. But it's going to be some good competition. I mean, I like that. You know, Sam Mustaford is a guy that he's there every single day. He shows up. He's a smart player. So, I mean, if Cody goes to center and Sam's there, I know he's a free agent, so you don't know really what's going to happen there. But that could be quite a competition. I think, you know, signing Nate Davis from Tennessee is going to add some competition to that offensive line. That's really what I look forward to at training camp and building this team. And I'm sure what Ryan Poles is going to do in the future is, get guys that are going to compete. Jobs aren't earned in the off season. I just believe they got to be earned in training camp and how you physically go out in the field and stake your claim to that job.
Jay Hilgenberg is my guest, center for the 85 Bears. So we're talking to him about Cody Whitehair. And if Nate Davis, the contract would seem to indicate he's your starting left guard. That's where he plays.
I mean, I like his measurables. 6'3". He's going to be a leverage guy. I believe in 6'3", 6'2", because that's what I am. So,
so you're a strong believer in club 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah, absolutely I am. The other thing I hear all these scouts talk about, measurables, and they knock guys having short arms, and I'm telling you, that's the most overrated thing in the NFL, is have these guys having long arms. It's all about your feet. If you have slow feet, it doesn't matter what your upper body or your strength or anything like that. You got to have quick feet to play in the NFL.
So Bill Parcells was a guy who believed in measurables. He would hear none of it. If you didn't fit what his profile said, he was that guy. Now, certainly there, as you said, there are other, if a guy can play, and especially with tackles, it's feet more than anything else. So there are, I don't know how many coaches now, given given the wave of analytics, I don't know how prevalent that is. But if you say, turn on the tape, translate for me, you turn on the tape, you watch a guy play against college players and not NFL players. And the NFL players are bigger. They're meaner. They're faster. They got tricks. So what is it you look for? How would a fan listening to you turn on the tape and scout, say, Peter Skoronski, whose arm length is not what some would like? How would you scout him? What should fans look at?
Does he play with a good base? I look for, hip strength, flexibility, knee bend, how well you work your hands, inside position, the quickness. You do mention, Bill Parcells and the analytics, and I've always said I was so lucky coming out of college that I wasn't asked to go to the combine, because I would have done so bad at the combine I never would have gotten a free agent tryout with the Chicago Bears. And it was just I was lucky to have Mike Dick as my head coach, because he didn't care about analytics. It's just whether you could play or not. And you just look at guys' backgrounds too. Do they love the game? I think that has to be top of the list. You got to get guys that absolutely love football and love everything about it, the training in the off season. How do you enjoy working out? That was a big thing. Tom Thayer and I remember, as soon as the season was over, we'd usually go over to Hawaii or something like that. And, we wouldn't take one day off. We'd sit and start working out again right away. And, so that's, you can outwork people in the NFL. In any aspect in life, you can outwork somebody. And if you want it bad enough, I really believe you commit to it. With everything now, with the way the diets and people, we've learned about nutrition and dieting, you can really increase people's potential to play in the NFL.
What we've learned about Jay Hilgenberg in the last couple months is that he owned a horse or co-owned horses with Buddy Ryan, and he was lucky. Maybe the only person to say he was lucky that Ditka was his coach. How many other guys have said that? Jay, how many other guys say that, feel that?
I don't know. Well, I'm not sure. I don't think I've discussed that much with the other guys. I grew up in a football. My uncle played 16 years in the NFL, the same era, with Mike Ditka. Uh-huh. So, I grew up watching the NFL and looking up to these guys. So it was always, every day I went to work, I tried to, get a compliment and impress and catch Dick's eye about something I would do. So he was a real motivator. And also our offensive line coach, Dick Stanfill, Hall of Fame player. You get compliments for those guys. You're doing something well.
All right, well, we're glad you didn't go to the combine. We're glad you came on the score as well. Jay, I appreciate it always. Thanks for the visit.
Hey, nice talking to you.
All right, that's Jay Hilgenberg, Bears center. Super Bears, my friend. 85 Bears, and he was on the WBBM 780 AM pregame, postgame, halftime show with the former Ron Gleason and Jim Schwantz. Love talking offensive line with him, and he is a link to the last Bears champion, the only Bears Super Bowl champion. And it's not happening next year. That's what's frustrating. But what is going to happen, it's happening now in baseball, new rules. It affects players, managers, scouts, everybody, including announcers. We're going to talk to an announcer, a name that scoreheads might recognize, Wayne Randazzo. He was a co-host on Saturday Suckage, as was virtually everyone in the 312 area code. Right now he's calling Angels games. He'll be talking about Shohei Ohtani. How soon does Wayne run out of descriptions? We'll ask him that. We'll talk about the new rules, what broadcasters have to do. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
How would you characterize kind of the activity on the offensive tackle market and what this week has been like and where you go from here?
Yeah, I will stick to this. It comes down to value and where we felt comfortable. With our research, our evaluations, analytics, all of that, there was a certain point where we were comfortable with based on the value and the evaluation that we had. And if it surpassed that, we were okay with moving on.
And it did. Ryan Poles thought, Going above $17 million for Mike McGlinchey was too much. Said pass. Bye-bye. Let's talk offensive line. We just talked defensive line with Corey Wooten. We will talk offensive line with Jay Hilgenberg. He's joining me on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Jay, thanks for taking time out this morning. I appreciate it.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling pretty groovy. You know, sometimes my grooviness precedes me, but that's just something that cannot be dealt with other than to wrap yourself in it. Okay, Jay?
Right. It's hard to deny that.
Yeah, hard to deny grooviness. So it looks like from all the stuff Ryan Pohl said, let's start with, it looks like Cody Whitehair is moving back to center for now. Everything with Ryan Pohl's, rightly so, is for now or today. So what do you think of that? You've watched him play center. You watched him play guard. Scout the center, scouting the center for me.
Cody is quite an athlete in there. He's had a nice career. Last year he was banged up a little bit, played injured. I think that affected him a little bit. The one thing I have a little concern on with Cody at the center position is playing out of the shotgun. He had trouble snapping that pass back to the quarterback, and then he ended up like what a lot of college guys do, is just grab one end of the ball and flip it back. And if Justin feels fine with that, there shouldn't be a problem with doing it that way. But it's going to be some good competition. I mean, I like that. You know, Sam Mustaford is a guy that he's there every single day. He shows up. He's a smart player. So, I mean, if Cody goes to center and Sam's there, I know he's a free agent, so you don't know really what's going to happen there. But that could be quite a competition. I think, you know, signing Nate Davis from Tennessee is going to add some competition to that offensive line. That's really what I look forward to at training camp and building this team. And I'm sure what Ryan Pohl is going to do in the future is, get guys that are going to compete. Jobs aren't earned in the off season. I just believe they got to be earned in training camp and how you physically go out in the field and stake your claim to that job.
Jay Hilgenberg is my guest, center for the 85 Bears. So we're talking to him about Cody White here. And if Nate Davis, is he, the contract would seem to indicate he's your starting left guard. That's where he plays.
I mean, I like his measurables. 6'3". He's going to be a leverage guy. I believe in 6'3", 6'2", because that's what I am. So,
so you're a strong believer in club 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah, absolutely I am. The other thing I hear all these scouts talk about, measurables, and They knock guys having short arms, and I'm telling you, that's the most overrated thing in the NFL, is have these guys having long arms. It's all about your feet. If you have slow feet, it doesn't matter what your upper body or your strength or anything like that. You got to have quick feet to play in the NFL.
So Bill Parcells was a guy who believed in measurables. He would hear none of it if you didn't fit what his profile said. He was that guy. Now, certainly there, as you said, there are other, if a guy can play, he can play. And especially with tackles, it's feet more than anything else. So there are, I don't know how many coaches now, given the number of, given the wave of analytics, I don't know how prevalent that is. But if you say, turn on the tape, translate for me, you turn on the tape, you watch a guy play against college players and not NFL players. And the NFL players are bigger. They're meaner, they're faster, they got tricks. So what is it you look for? How would a fan listening to you turn on the tape and scout, say, Peter Skoronski, whose arm length is not what some would like, how would you scout him? What should fans look at?
Does he play with a good base? I look for, hip strength, flexibility, knee bend, how well you work your hands, inside position, the quickness. You do mention, Bill Parcells and the analytics, and you know, I've always said I was so lucky coming out of college that I wasn't asked to go to the combine, because I would have done so bad at the combine, I never would have gotten a free agent tryout with the Chicago Bears. And it was just, I was lucky to have Mike Ditka as my head coach, because, you know, he didn't care about analytics. It's just whether you could play or not. And so, I mean, you just look at guys' backgrounds too. I mean, do they love the game? I think that has to be top of the list. You got to get guys that absolutely love football and love everything about it, the training in the off season. You know, how do you enjoy working out? That was a big thing. You know, Tom Thayer and I remember as soon as the season was over, we would we'd usually go over to Hawaii or something like that, and you know, we wouldn't take one day off. We'd sit and start working out again right away. And so that's, you know, you can outwork people in the NFL. In any aspect in life, you can outwork somebody. And if you want it bad enough, I really believe you commit to it. With everything now, with the way the diets and people we've learned about nutrition and dieting, you can really increase people's potential to play in the NFL.
What we've learned about Jay Hilgenberg in the last couple months is that he owned a horse or co-owned horses with Buddy Ryan, and he was lucky, maybe the only person to say he was lucky that Ditka was his coach. How many other guys have said that? Jay, how many other guys say that, feel that?
I don't know. Well, you know, I'm not sure. I don't think I've discussed that much with the other guys. But, you know, I grew up in a football, you know, my uncle played 16 years in the NFL, the same era, you know, with Mike Ditka. Uh-huh. So, you know, I grew up watching the NFL and looking up to these guys. So it was always, every day I went to work, I tried to, you know, get a compliment and impress and catch Dick's eye about something I would do. So he was a real motivator. And also our offensive line coach, Dick Stanfield, Hall of Fame player. I mean, you get compliments for those guys, you know you're doing something well.
All right. Well, we're glad you didn't go to the combine. We're glad you came on the score as well. Jay, I appreciate it always. Thanks for the visit.
Hey, nice talking to you.
All right. That's Jay Hilgenberg, Bears center. Super Bears, my friend. 85 Bears, and he was on the WBBM 780 AM pregame, postgame, halftime show with the former Ron Gleason and Jim Schwantz. Love talking offensive line with him, and he is a link to the last Bears champion, the only Bears Super Bowl champion. And it's not happening next year. That's what's frustrating. But what is going to happen, it's happening now in baseball, new rules. It affects players, managers, scouts, everybody, including announcers. We're going to talk to an announcer, a name that scoreheads might recognize, Wayne Randazzo. He was a co-host on Saturday Suckage, as was virtually everyone in the 312 area code. Right now he's calling Angels games. He'll be talking about Shohei Ohtani. How soon does Wayne run out of descriptions? We'll ask him that. We'll talk about the new rules, what broadcasters have to do. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.